Hey everybody, welcome to another awesome episode of Marketing Monday. Today we got a great news topic, topics for you. We're going to talk about Facebook, a little Vine, and a little Instagram. Plus, our big topic of the day is list building. Philip is joining me. Philip, how are you?
Doing well.
All right, are you ready to get into this?
Yeah, let's get it started.
Let's do it.
All right, so the first topic is building lists. So Tyler, start us off with that topic.
Well, you know, list building is really important. And I've noticed how a lot of people, a lot of clients, a lot of businesses don't really understand the importance of what creating and keeping up to date a good list is, whether that be an email list, which I know, Philip, you are a huge fan of.
Mm-hmm.
Or a remarketing list. If you've put a, like say a Google tag or a Facebook pixel on your website, that is creating a list. Or an SMS list. If you're creating a list that is just people that have signed up and agreed so that you can send them text messages on their phone with advertising or special offers or even customer assistance. Building a proper list and using it is key. So, Philip, what kind of list do you keep that helps the Haunt Journal, helps Marketing Monday, helps all the stuff? What is your most important list?
So, the list that we find most important is our email list. And you know, we have multiple different ways for people to subscribe to that list. We have pieces of content they can download or ways they can enter into the list, and then we tag them with their interest level, what they're interested in, and start collecting information on them, and then we can make sure that we send them targeted emails based on what their tags are, basically. And that's kind of the theory with it. And the reason that I like lists so much is because they are in your control. You know, they're not something that can be, you know, easily just taken away or disappear the next day. It's not like you are renting out somebody else's platform. So, you know, when you're using Facebook or when you're using, you know, you're buying advertising or you're using any of those other platforms out there, you know, you are relying on that, the rules of that person's platform, and those rules can change and that platform can disappear. So having your customer data in a place that you can control, that is backed up, that then if something happens, you can still utilize, I think that's just very, very important for attractions of all sizes, you know, and making sure that you are giving them the information they need when they need it. And that's, you know, all that is important with the list, because you have much more direct control. You know, your social, your advertising, you know, that's really hitting people kind of at haphazard times. You know, I mean, you can more finely tune it with Facebook and with the social ads to be within a time frame, but you're still, you know, not exactly hitting everybody right when you need to. So your list, you can hit the people that you need to hit at the time you need to hit them. It's much more targeted, it's much more owned, and you have much more control over that.
Yeah, those are all awesome, great qualities of having an email list. I'm personally not a huge fan of having an email list, just because I know when I sign up for things, you know, I have two or three different email accounts that I use, and one of them is what I dump, like, all the spam, like, marketing stuff. So if I'm ever at, say, Best Buy, and they're having an offer where I can get 10% off of a computer or a Blu-ray player or something, I'm going to give them that junk email. And it's an email I never check at all. And I feel like a lot of consumers do that. What I'm a huge fan of are pixel-generated lists. Why? It's because I can use that list to retarget that consumer or remarket. based on their interests, based on what they're doing. And now, actually, you can use, I know with Google, if you're working in AdWords, you've always been able to use an audience list with the Google tag to do some retargeting with the display network or within YouTube. But Google has been slowly rolling out remarketing, retargeting within the search results. And that's a huge method of getting consumers back into your website. Maybe, I know, Philip, we've discussed about Facebook, the Facebook pixel targeting people that have abandoned their shopping carts before. But the Google pixel, you know, I'm going to start experimenting with it on retargeting some things directly within the search. And that's why I like that, is that we've seen the statistics. I'm trying to find some here.
Yeah, well, I want to take a step back very briefly and just kind of make sure that we're very clear for those listening. You know, Tyler, can you explain when you say retargeting, you know, what you mean by that, and kind of just break this up a little bit, because we're talking about list building and it's a very broad topic. And since this is a kind of shorter shows in season two, we're just trying to give an overview of what list building is. And so, yeah. So kind of just tell us a little bit about what retargeting is and kind of just what, the essence of list building is, just for people that might not do any of this at all.
No, definitely. If you're running a social media ad campaign, a Facebook campaign, or if you're doing a lot of Google search, AdWords, things like that, or if you've worked with an ad agency that is doing a lot of digital advertising for you, whether that be display or video, you've probably had to deal with a pixel tag. A pixel is just a strip of code that you put on your website that tracks each person that comes to that website, comes to that page. So what that allows you to do is, if you're running an AdWords campaign and someone sees your ad for the first time and they click the link, obviously, you know, you have to pay Google for that click, but they've gone to your website now and your website has dropped a cookie onto that person's computer, and it stays there forever unless they clear out all of their cookies. Which a lot of people don't do anymore, surprisingly. A lot of statistics are coming out saying that less and less people are deleting those cookies, and that's why this is becoming such a big thing. But retargeting is hitting that person again. So not new people. You're strictly going to target an ad to people who have already seen your ad or been to your website before. So they're on this little special list of consumers that have already shown interest in your business. So you're going to retarget them. You're going to remarket to that person. So that's essentially what it is. And that's why I like it.
Yeah. So essentially, you know, you're building a list of people that already, you know, in one form or another, you're building a list of people, whether it's via email or whether it's, you know, via the cookies or whether it's via text or et cetera, that have some interest in your brand of some kind. And the idea basically is, it's much more effective advertising dollars to spend it on retargeting to try and take somebody and keep moving them down the funnel than it is to just try and get new people. In fact, I was at a master class last year and they actually recommended that 70% of your social media budget go into retargeting.
Yes. There's a statistic out there that says 9 out of 10 people will visit up to 4 websites before making a purchase. So, and we've all done it. If you're searching for new shoes or new clothes or anything really, you're probably going to do your research and go to a few different websites before you actually sit and make that purchase. Now, let's say your website is the first website they visit. It'd be good to get back in front of that person again, and hopefully you're the business they end up spending their money with. So website visitors who are retargeted are actually 70% more likely to convert on your website.
Yeah, I was going to add to another very typical situation that we see with the importance of retargeting is that especially with mobile taking off more, somebody will be considering a purchasing decision on mobile and then they'll get interrupted. And the idea with retargeting is that it can transcend devices. So if you have a Pixel or you have a Google tracker, right, somebody can look at your event and they can be thinking about going to your event on mobile, right? And then they like check with their friends or they whatever, they have time to think about it. And then you want to hit them later and remind them when they get home and they're ready to actually buy the tickets. So that's a very common scenario, is people, you know, thinking about something to do over the weekend or thinking about going to your event, seeing it on mobile and then getting interrupted and forgetting, and then you need to remind them to come back. So, you know, that's another good big scenario.
Now, our other method of list building is SMS. Now, Philip, do you utilize any text messaging, advertising, marketing at all?
You know, I used to use Lead Pages text opt-in function for live events, but I haven't used any of that recently.
Yeah, I have started to do more research on this, and I've not been a fan of it only because I've not been a fan of it. Like, I hate when I receive a text message from a organization or a company with like a special offer or something, and that I don't remember ever giving them my phone number or opting into something like that. Which is one thing I want to make clear, is that with the text messages and cell phones are heavily regulated by the government. And in order to, you cannot just go buy a list of phone numbers to push text messages to. You actually have to create your own list and have people actually opt in to receiving marketing from you. So, obviously, one way to do that is, this is just an example, but if you're a restaurant owner, you put a placard on each table that says, receive, 15% off of your appetizers during happy hour, get extended happy hour if you text feed me to whatever number. That is essentially that consumer opting into your marketing and giving you their phone number. You're building your list. So if you're an attraction owner, you could say you could run an offer. And then, granted, this is just an example. Go buy one, get one. Text thrill to, whatever number you want. And then what this does then is, not only do you send them the offer, but now you have a list of phone numbers that you can go back to push special offers, contests, giveaways, things like that, or even just general information. So let's say you walk into a baseball stadium and the very first thing you see is a giant sign that says, for stadium information, text baseball to this number. And instead of marketing messages, it could be event information. So for where's the bathroom? Text back to one for tonight, information like shows going on this weekend, text back two. So that's one way of doing it. So company or business information, more on the customer side of things, or marketing, advertising, special offers, that side of things. So that's one way of doing it. Obviously, we talked about all the retargeting and the pixel and the email. So list building is huge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep, and of course, if that's something you guys want to hear more about, let us know in the show survey as we start compiling the topic and research for next time. But Tyler and I, for this show, wanted to give you just an overview of that because it is one of the kind of essential marketing mix components for any sort of a digital advertising for attractions right now, is actually collecting your list of people so that you can retarget to them, whether that be through, Facebook Pixel, which if you don't have your Facebook Pixel set up, we'll probably have a topic about that later. That's very important for you to do, to have that so that you actually can track, what ads are converting. Same thing with the Google tracker and, gathering their information on mobile or their physical location or their email address. The other thing is, to also never really underestimate just building a classic direct mail list either, with physical addresses. So that wraps up our list building topic. And I have the next news segment, which comes to us courtesy of TechCrunch. And the news article is, Facebook admits it must do more to stop the spread of misinformation on its platform. So for those of you that are not aware, there is a very big problem that Facebook has had for a while, actually, with false news stories coming out on Facebook. Because if you think about it, you know, anybody can publish a link or something on Facebook, right? There's no fact checking in order to make a post. So that, in light of the recent election, that's kind of been the catalyst that has pushed this story more into the mainstream here. I just want to read a little piece of this, because it's actually just hilarious. So they reported on an entire cottage industry of web users in Macedonia that generated fake news stories related to Trump versus Clinton in order to inject them into Facebook's news feed as a way to drive viral news and generate ad revenue from lucrative U.S. eyeballs. This enterprise has apparently been wildly successful for the teens involved, with some apparently managing to pull in up to $3,000 and $5,000 per month thanks to the power of Facebook's amplification algorithm. So I guess basically there's a bunch of teenagers in Macedonia that are writing like viral content for the election, like false viral content, just making false news sites, and then making money on that content because of all the election money that was out there.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's actually pretty hilarious. And here's Facebook's rebuttal here, or their little like statement here from Facebook, is, we take misinformation on Facebook very seriously. We value authentic communication and hear consistently from those who use Facebook that they prefer not to see misinformation. Well, duh. In newsfeed, we use various signals based on community feedback to determine which posts are likely to contain inaccurate information and reduce their distribution. In trending, we look at a variety of signals to help make sure topics being shown are reflective of real-world events and take additional steps to prevent false or misleading content from appearing. Despite these efforts, we understand that there's so much more we need to do, and that is why it's important that we keep improving our ability to detect misinformation. We're committed to continuing to work on this issue and improve the experiences on our platform. So they did admit, obviously, in here, but it's still a very big problem, and we're really not sure how they're going to solve it. So not only is this hilarious, but it has a point, I promise, for attractions. So as this becomes more prolific and as fact checking kind of loses its ground, you know, we're seeing,
that is such a sad
thing. Yeah.
As fact checking loses.
Yeah. Well, its nobody
ground.
Does it. So, but so,
I hate people.
So it's not like this is, you know, really news to a lot of people out there, especially those that, you know, use the internet a lot. So what it's doing is causing consumers to, like Tyler said earlier, you know, have to do multiple checks just to figure out what's real. And also really that they are trusting influencers a lot more than mainstream brands, or just things that they see. They trust the influencer more because the assumption being that the influencer is doing fact checking. So, you know, you actually trust an individual that you build a relationship with because kind of like, you know, that they're doing their job to present information to you. And how this circles back to attractions is, it's very important for you all out there that run attractions, when you're considering how to market, to think about pairing up with influencers. It's not today, you know, it's not all about just targeting Fox News and targeting, you know, those mainstream media places to get PR coverage. It's also about targeting influencers, and that includes even smaller influencers like bloggers. You know, it's not I guess as a completely surefire way of convincing people that your attraction is great. You know, I guess people are much less likely now to trust a review from a mainstream media source than they are going to be to trust a review from an influencer that they follow, even if the influencer only has 1,000 fans. Right? So, yeah.
Well, and here's the problem with that, though. I'm just going to play devil's advocate. If you're a small attraction owner in, say, I don't know, Cleveland, Ohio, and you're doing all you can to advertise, to market your event, you've had the news stations out, you have your radio spots running, and something's not quite clicking until somebody with a decent following, let's just say like 20, 30,000 people, a very small influencer shares one of your social media posts. And then that explodes and you end up getting, let's say, 1 million, 1.5 million, clicks or video views or whatever on that post, and your social media is blowing up and you're getting all kinds of emails and phone calls. The problem is you have, like, for that small attraction in Cleveland, is an influencer really going to influence people in your market to go buy your show, buy your event? Or is it just going to generate more of a national attention on social media, and you're getting phone calls in from California from people who will never come to your event and have no way of coming to your event? So what I would recommend is that you try to find those influencers that are more regional, closer to your attraction, and it's really hard to find.
Well, I mean, yeah, but there are multiple firms out there that do keep directories of influencers, A. B, it shouldn't be too hard to find, because you kind of just have to do a little bit of digging on just your Google foo of figuring out who writes for, like local areas. I do agree that when you are targeting influence, you should be looking at influencers that are part that your audience is listening to, so where your audience is listening, influencers from that sphere. These can be individual bloggers, they can be individual journalists, they can be individual reviewers, they can be anything depending on what you have at your attraction. So yeah.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to bring up, is that even though people, like we just talked about, people may be losing their trust with, national or even like big branded media like an NBC or an ABC. You may watch your local CBS news and they fall into that whole, I don't trust the news anymore or whatever. But you love the weatherman and he is so trustworthy. He might have his own Facebook page or his own social media streams where you might want to connect with and try to get him or someone like him to share some of your things or make a post about you. Maybe not so much the news outlet themselves, but that individual person.
Yes. So I also want to pair this with another study that came out, which is from Orbit Media Studios, and they did a survey of 1,000 bloggers and kind of populated the results here. And some things that are interesting to keep you guys thinking about this is some of the trends they looked at is that long-form posts are becoming the norm. So a typical blog post is 10% longer than in 2014, which is a pretty big shift. It means that it's not just like when they think of blogging, think it's just a little like short little paragraph thing. And they're like, why am I going to bring somebody out here to just do that? Some of the bloggers we work with the Haunted Attraction Network, they write 3,000 to 5,000 word reviews. It's not some of them are just not a paragraph. Some of it is a lot of work for some of these people. So the other thing is, frequency is increasing, not very much, but most of them are still struggling to do daily posts. So these are kind of, I guess the point of that is they're still rare. It's not like It's not like they have nothing to do and they're just waiting around. So you do need to court them a little bit with that. A lot of bloggers are working together. So 6% of bloggers publish the majority of their original content as guest posts, which is very interesting, which means you really do need to like try and find the individual influencer like Tyler just suggested. And bloggers are marketing their marketing. So bloggers are increasing the use of promotion techniques that drive traffic to their posts, including paid promotions, the use of which increased by 93% over the past year, which is crazy. And that's a huge thing. So that means that, like, you know, when you invite these people to come to your attraction and to work with these influencers, you know, they are also spending money to just advertise their reviews then of your attraction or whatever type of thing that they do, you know, their video or whatever that they do. Images offer an oasis in a text-heavy landscape. So the use of visual content formats, including images, list charts, embedded social media, slide shares, is on the rise. So make sure also this, oh, this is a thing. Again, a short rant here. This is a thing for you attraction owners too. Understand that visual is very important to everybody. Like, it's important to mainstream media and it's important to even bloggers, you know, as this study shows. And a lot of the media nights I went to this year for events in California were not set up to allow you to take photos, which just boggled my mind. It was just crazy. You'd go through the attractions, then they were not lit, so you couldn't take videos or photos, and then they didn't have photos readily available in their press kit, and that's like a deal killer.
That's insane.
It is insane, right? So, anyway, I'm kind of over time on my two news elements, but those are my news elements, and I know Tyler wanted to bring up. Yeah, go ahead.
Mine's real quick. Basically, as of the end of November, Instagram has now over 500 million active monthly users. And this is huge, because if you're running a ad campaign on Facebook and you're not running your ads on Instagram, you're losing out on so much. And this also the news I was reading also mentioned that Twitter, I know we're going to talk about Twitter shutting down Vine, but Twitter is not doing so hot right now. And in fact, their users are going down, which is surprising. So Instagram is exploding, and it's becoming one of the top competitors with Snapchat as far as the short form video and image platform. And I just wanted to share that just so you know, attraction owners, if you're not... You don't have to be utilizing Instagram, but if you're not advertising on Instagram, you are losing out.
Yep. And our last news item is courtesy of Adweek, which Tyler already hinted to, which is this is kind of old news. I get old as in it's from October 2016. So that's, I guess it's pretty old. Twitter just shut down Vine after 4 years. So Twitter just shut down Vine 4 years after buying it for $30 million. Which is the title, and the subtitle is couldn't compete with Instagram and Snapchat. So in a little short, interesting article on here, but I mean, that's the bulk of it is just that, yeah, Twitter, you know, they paid $30 million for Vine about 4 years ago, and then they shut it down.
That is one giant tax write-off.
Yeah.
I mean, I was shocked. I was literally shocked when I saw that, because I would much rather Twitter shut Twitter down than Vine. Personally, at least for me, I enjoyed Vine more. With, you know, just because it was just a good source of hilarious videos that I could just sit and kind of, you know, go out of my mind for a minute and just watch and laugh. And I was so upset, and I feel bad, like, for the influencers that have built careers and built, you know, their incomes strictly online. This is insane.
Yep. Yes. There's an entire ecosystem set up around Vine and people that have their entire incomes on here. And they did say that, you know, it says in here in the release that we'll be keeping the website online because we think it's important to still be able to watch all the incredible vines that have been made, you'll be notified before we make any changes to the app or website. So they are keeping them, I guess, for now alive, but it's another thing, like we just said earlier in the show, you know, you don't want this could happen to really anything that you are using. So, you know, those.
Well, did you see the news? Like, it was like today, I think I saw it, of there's a big design and kind of platform change coming for Instagram.
Yeah.
And it's going to be incorporating some very, some features that Vine users are used to. So now that Twitter has shut down Vine, you absolutely know Facebook is going to step in with Instagram and kind of try to fill that space that Vine was in. So I would not be surprised at all if some of those Vine influencers kind of hop on over to Instagram or Snapchat and just kind of start up again.
Yeah, well, we will keep you notified. So that's it. We've gotten through everything. So
that's it for today.
Yeah. Well, I want to remind everybody, the surveys are still open and we're still trying to collect as much feedback as possible to be able to create the content that you want to hear. So you can go to www.hauntedapplication.com. It's one word, all lowercase, www.hauntedapplication.com, in order to fill out our survey and give us feedback as an attraction owner or operator or whatever role you have in attractions as to what you would like to know more about and what your familiarity and your skill levels are so that we know how to better curate content for you on this show. So on behalf of Tyler from Red Rock and myself from Gantt Mining Controls, that wraps up this week's episode. We'll see you in a few weeks.
Good night, everybody.